always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to this shoddily prepared edition. That's no different than any other, so whatever. It's just a regular show.
All right, make sure you got this microphone turned on over here. We got the microphones all out of whack.
Yeah, I don't like that one. I like this one.
Something one and three, I got it.
Yeah.
You got it?
two is all gimped up. I don't
take
like
one
it.
And two. And
you're way more clever than I thought.
Three and four.
We could do like stereo. You could get two and I could get two.
Afflicted loves that.
Well, I'm sure he does.
Welcome to a very dry episode of Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Afflicted.
I guess I'm Lee.
I guess so. And he's...
Newhouse.
All right. We're working on... It's more shoddily than usual, apparently. So working on getting Peter Hughes on the air.
I'm Peter Hughes.
Oh! And Barrett is still in Italy. He has not killed himself yet, so we're very proud of him.
We're done with Barrett.
He hasn't broken
I'm
his
so
phone
over.
Either.
Barrett was so last month.
He hasn't killed himself, and he hasn't broken his phone either.
That we know of. Now, somebody who was riding with him for part of his journey did lose their phone.
Well, his phone was already pre-broken for his convenience before he even went over.
Yes. So we hope that everyone out there listening is... high and dry, mostly high.
Dry.
If you're not dry. God, what a great couple of days it's been. I was watching the floodwaters come up through my up into my yard and just sat there for a while, and then the power went out, so yay.
Didn't rain enough down on my neck of the woods, down on the southeast side of town.
So it rained extra on me for you.
That's right. You got all my rain, Jay.
I'm terribly sorry. I'd be happy to give it to you. This
send,
the way you like
send
it.
Send the rain down my way.
So it was a very interesting night on Monday night. Was it Monday night? Yeah, it was Monday
yeah,
night.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
So I was watching, you know, all the really, really bad, scary parts with the most lightning bolts and the extra green boxes around it. That's where I live. It's like this. It was going to be called the Flash Flood Emergency Zone. It's called the, like, Stick It to Jay Lee Zone.
It was the Jay Lee Maneuver.
Yeah, well, fortunately, we really did dodge. I mean, we had to toss out a couple $100 worth of groceries because the fridge and the deep freeze lost power.
You kept opening the door, didn't you?
No.
You just kept looking inside.
Is it still cold? Is it still...
Is the light on?
No. Sadly, I think more stuff could have been saved than was saved, but Cynthia decided that, you know what? I'm not taking any chances.
You lost power for like 3 minutes?
We lost power for over 24 hours.
You lost...
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
We had... Was it
just your house?
That's like evacuate town territory for me.
Like a few houses around you, or
no? There's our street, our side of the street, and the side of the street on the street next to us always goes out when there's a bad storm. We were out 8 days after Ike, but the houses across the street from us completely lit. Just oh yeah, no big deal. Mm-mm. And then the guy with the giant monster truck comes rolling through the neighborhood to scope everything out and sends the waves crashing into...
He does that every time, evidently.
Every time. He's like, I am unaffected. Look at me. I have a giant truck. And, yeah, I didn't really get a good look at him this time going by because I was just like, I was over it from the last time. But when he went through, it was like houses that weren't quite flooded... Went ahead and pushed water up against the door.
Oh, fabulous.
Watched the car, you know.
Thanks, guy.
He tries to drive slow, but it's just a slow wake.
Did he have anywhere to go, or was he just like, hey, the street's flooded. Yep. Let's go jump in the truck and drive around.
Let's make the block. He lives on the next block over.
Do you have an American flag in the back of the...
No, not yet.
Bed of the truck?
No, but a big... Some words on it, you know, that probably says, you know,
truck.
I'm a jerk.
Puddle jumper.
Maybe we need to find a friend of the show who's a cop who's got one of those, the deal that you roll out across the street and when you push the button, the spikes come out.
Didn't
and
see
then
those
just
in
watch
the water.
Him watch him sink into the water as he goes farther down the street.
Must have been a tree branch.
Even on the
I don't know what happened.
Even with four flats on that thing, he'd still be above water. I mean, the tire could be completely flat. The tire still sticks up out of the water.
That's a big truck.
It is a big truck.
But then everybody in the neighborhood needs to run over towards him, pushing the water towards the door of the truck so that maybe it could go, like, up and in as you arrive. Can we help you? It looks like you have a problem.
Womp, womp.
Yeah, that's the truck.
I hate him already.
That guy. Don't be that guy.
That guy loves being that guy.
He does.
It takes a certain kind of guy to be that guy.
I was really surprised because I noticed that the house next door to his was up for sale and we were on a walk. I was like, that house is never going to sell. Because he's got this giant truck parked in the driveway and he's got a couple of other smaller giant trucks and then some Mustangs and
some
stuff.
Less giant.
It's like in Modern Family when the family moves in next door and it's the redneck family with the boat, but rather than taking the boat out anywhere, they just keep the boat in the driveway and party on that all day long. It's one of those kind of houses.
Yeah.
I was going to say on IRC, KD5 said that Barrett got a new phone right before he left.
Oh.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We sit corrected.
Well.
We'll see how long that lasts.
So there is a good chance that he might break a phone on the trip.
We have to break the phone as soon as he gets back for him. Something might have to have an accident.
Some nice phone you got there. I'd hate something happen to it.
He can handle
like
that.
Like belonging to you.
He can handle all that on his own.
Yeah. All right, so welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. Visit us at geekradio.com. If you tried to visit us sometime over the weekend, it was down for a few hours. But
what, does a server live in your closet?
Everything.
No, there was a problem on with logger tape.
What's that, Pete?
No, there was a problem with something with the log rotation, and so when it did the log rotation on Monday in the middle of the night, or around 3 or 4 in the morning, something didn't go right, and Apache didn't when it tried to start back up, it has that whole thing where the log file's already open or kind of error.
Should ditch Apache. Let's use Nginx. Let's have a web server holy war on the air right here. Just go crazy. My
chair is slowly sinking down. I'm not doing anything to it. It's just whatever.
Maybe that part of the studio is actually sinking.
Whoa, the flooding is undermining the foundation of the house.
In the second half of the show, Lee is going to come through with his big wheeled chair.
I am.
Come by you.
Blow right through here.
As you sink.
And I'm going to honk.
Honk, honk. All right, so yeah, visit us online at geekradio.com. I will say that the website has been a lot more trusty and reliable the last many years. It's been a long time since I've had to call Pete and say,
fix it.
The internet is down. So that's good. And so you can visit that page and enjoy
the website.
The website is down.
That's my
page. Oh, I just rewatched all of those just like a month or two ago.
They're still so good. You just need to watch the first one.
The conference call one I think is slowly becoming my favorite, because the conference call one has the moment where the sysadmin guy like Skype calls up like the network admin, and like, if the sysadmin guy is like, you know, the crazy sysadmin, the network admin guy is like the scary one. He's like the dragon emerges from the cave. And I hope you didn't click that recompute decryption key button, because if you did, I don't know you anymore. Hangs up on it. It's really good. This is a series of sketches called "The Website Is Down." Listeners, if you haven't listened to them, they are absolutely hilarious. But if you haven't worked in IT, you'll miss some of the humor. And a lot of times, if you're missing the jokes in some of these, then you might have been the subject of some of these jokes by your IT department.
All right. So the phone number, if you want to call in, we're not sure how many calls we're going to get to take tonight, but 713-526-5738. But first, before we do anything else, we're going to go to San Antonio, which is high and dry also, and do the Technology Bites Info Shot. So take it away, Info Shot. I said.
It's the Technology Bytes Info Shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
So the hacking streak continues. You know, by that I mean hacking news, where some kind of exploit or other gets to be in the news. This is a good one. Internal Revenue Service is warning that intruders stole tax data for 100,000 people between February and May by taking advantage of a flaw in the agency's transcript website. That's a place where you'd go a lot of times, like people who like owe money or people who are buying a house, you know, or need to get their records, go and request get their stuff. The evildoers successfully circumvented a security check that asks for static info, like your social security number and tax filing status. The IRS is temporarily shutting down transcripts and says that its main servers are safe, but this could lead to the culprits filing for bogus tax refunds and getting victims in trouble. The kicker, security researchers have known about vulnerabilities in the transcript service for a while. It's not hard to bypass the identity checks if you're willing to find stolen personal information on the black market, and it's frequently possible to guess the right answer using educated guesses or number generators. Frankly, it's surprising that a breach on this scale hasn't happened sooner. The IRS will likely need to implement passwords or other changeable safeguards to prevent crooks from simply walking in the front door. You know, essentially, some of the things that they had, like a security question, it sounds like, except it was the kind of thing one of the things that's different with this is it wasn't like a random phishing expedition where they went and got as many as they could exploit out. This was more targeted, where they had to do a little bit of research to get information off of, say, Facebook and social media, is what's thought, to be able to answer the security quest, some of the security questions. For instance, you know, like what was your high school mascot and things like that. They, you know, that's possible to find by what people post on social media. So think about that one. So you may want to be more paranoid about some of what you post on Facebook. Even though you think it's all people you know, a lot of that's been opened up to where if you aren't very specific about how it's shared with everybody. And here's an interesting one. You know, when we started the show, being a geek was not what it is today. It was not a it wasn't a total negative, but it was not as positive and, I don't know, widespread as it is now. You know, it seems like everybody wants to be a geek now. Some people use nerd, but we're really more in our hierarchy, geek is above nerd. Nerd doesn't necessarily have any skills at all, and has no social skills, where a geek can be knowledgeable on one or more subjects. That's my definition. Talk about, you know, measuring kind of coolness. Hot Topic is buying Think Geek. You know, so Hot Topic, the kind of, you know, goth cool place in the mall that you've seen with all the, you know, the sort of clothing oriented Spencer's Gifts esque kind of place. Has realized that it's got plenty in common with ThinkGeek and bought the niche retailer in a deal worth $122 million. The CEO of Hot Topic believes that both companies share a strategy of, quote, delivering great products for avid fans of various licensed properties. Boy, doesn't that feel good? Now, when you go to ThinkGeek, you can realize that you're an avid fan of various licensed properties. Now the big thing is, you know, that they both sell shirts with, you know, licensed stuff. And since, you know, like Marvel characters or Doctor Who and so on, then they see some similarities. There's an interesting quirk of history here, since ThinkGeek was originally a side product for its parent company, GeekNet. As Bloomberg notes, the artist formerly known as SourceForge was a dot-com bubble hit back in the day. After presented a Linux-based alternative to Windows to the mass market, ThinkGeek was purchased with several other small businesses after the company raised a fortune in its IPO. Shortly after that, the bubble burst and SourceForge found solace in the web's only good April Fool's pranker. Interesting that, you know, basically you just wonder, is there going to be any crossover, or are they going to make ThinkGeek more goth, or is Hot Topic going to have a lot more Doctor Who stuff? I guess we'll have to wait and see. In other news, the Kindle, if you've ever used a Kindle, Amazon has not just been sitting back on this, apparently. One of the things, though, that's been kind of a limitation on the Kindle is the typography and typesetting has not been super great. They've had six different typefaces that are barely suitable for reading an actual book. You know, would you ever read a book in Futura? That's kind of that's more of an advertising short text kind of thing. But today, Amazon's making a big step towards better typography on the Kindle. They've unveiled Bookerly, the first typeface designed for the Kindle from scratch, and they apparently are also solving the Kindle's typesetting problems with an all-new layout engine that introduces better text justification, kerning. Kerning is the spacing between the letters, in case you didn't know. Drop caps, image positioning, and more. So, in appearance, it looks something like if Baskerville, a 225-year-old typeface that has been shown to shape our perception of truth, and Cecilia made a baby. they've made it to where, you know, both of those fonts were available on the Kindle before, but they had issues on, like, a low-res device. Baskerville's thin lines looked crude, whereas Cecilia, a slab serif, was a bizarre choice as a previous default font. Although it's highly readable, it's a type of font best used for headlines instead of body text, because slab serifs often look and feel bolded even when they're not. Bookerly apparently is designed for whatever screen you want to use. It was designed from the ground up to be more readable than Cecilia. And according to internal tests, that means it's about 2% easier on the eye. But that's still across a lot of people makes a big difference. And then when it gets to larger sizes, then you get into you'll get into a lot more subtleties. So apparently that and the new layout engine is going to bring should make how the text looks in the flow of it look better and read smoother. So. Amazon updated the Kindle app for iOS with Bookerly and a new layout engine this morning. Another update rolling out the new font and typesetting technology to users of the Amazon's line of e-ink readers, Android, and other devices will be available later this summer. So if you have an iOS Kindle app, you may want to update it and see what the new font looks like. And if you've got a if you have your own e-reader at home, your Kindle, later this summer you should be getting an update and you can see the new font and see the new hotness. Then we've talked about robotics and about automation taking over people's jobs. I ran across an article on thenextweb.com the headline is, "What are the odds of losing your job to automation? Find out here." So that caught my eye. A team of researchers from the Oxford Martin School, an affiliate of Oxford University, set out to answer the question, how safe is your job, by scoring jobs on 9 possible traits. 4 of the 9 were said to be the most important determiners when trying to decide future automation risk. That is, how likely is it that your job will be mostly automated within the next 20 years. The four biggies were, do you need to come up with clever solutions? Are you required to personally help others? Does your job require you to squeeze into small spaces? And does your job require negotiation? For some professions, such as telemarketers, you're fairly guaranteed to be on the unemployment line in the near future. For others, such as mental health and substance abuse counselors, you'll be around a bit longer. So the scale on this is favorably tipped towards jobs that require reasoning, creative problem solving, or one-on-one human contact. Those that are more process-oriented, like working in a fast food restaurant, are deemed to be relatively easy to automate in the future. NPR combed through the data to make its own handy tool that allows you to gauge your automation risk. If you go to geekradio.com, on the front page, there's a post with links to all the articles from the info shot and from the other stuff for the show tonight. And you can go into that, into the article about the odds of losing your job to automation and find the link to the NPR piece. Their percentages in the thing are just estimates based on the study, and the researchers admit that. They're merely predictions. It could very well turn out wrong, but why not pay attention, look ahead to whether your job is going to get automated out. Apparently, I'm guessing sucking on the radio and goofing around for 2 hours every Wednesday night, fortunately, there's no revenue in it. So I doubt that we'll be automated out of our volunteer jobs. And then finally, this one's interesting. The kind of combines a few things, but in the next 5 years, more than 50% of the world's population will have internet access, and 80% of internet traffic will be devoted to video, according to a new study by Cisco. But it's not just billions of dinky YouTube videos that will suck up all that bandwidth. It's people cutting the cord. The number of online videos and the size of those videos is skyrocketing as more and more people ditch traditional cable and go to internet-enabled devices to watch television. On top of that, more people are ready to stream really big video files like 4K video needed to play on, super high D monitors. By 2019, they say 30% of internet connected TVs are expected to be 4K. So that's a little bit of bandwidth. the cord-cutting household consumes more than twice as much data per month as non-cord cutters, according to Cisco exec Robert Pepper. He told the Washington Post that. So, in other words, cord cutters aren't only going to change the business of television, but also going to change the amount of internet that we need. Moore's Law has got nothing on as far as growth goes, has nothing on internet traffic. Global IP traffic is five times as big as it was 5 years ago and will triple threefold over the next 5 years. Next year, worldwide IP traffic will reach 1.1 zettabytes per year. Just to give you some reference on that, one zettabyte is 1,000 exabytes. And then now we get to one that you're more familiar with. One exabyte is 1 billion gigabytes. So what you're talking about is 1,000 over 1,000 billion gigabytes of bandwidth next year. That's before it grows some more. That's how much traffic. We've got two potential problems that we already know about. We might run out of IP addresses if we don't get more people over to IPv6, and our internet infrastructure might not be able to handle all that data. So let's see, that's the Wired side. Even though the amount of internet data going to mobile devices won't match the huge amounts of video going to HD monitors, mobile numbers are going to change too, apparently. By 2019, traffic from wireless and mobile devices will exceed traffic from wired devices, accounting for 2/3 of all traffic. Right now, Wi-Fi mobile represents 54%, so about half. And get this, the number of devices connected to IP networks will be three times the global population in 2019. So that means three devices for every person on Earth. Right now, there are only two networked devices per person. So that puts yesterday's Charter-Time-Warner merger in perspective. Cable company, internet company, whatever, it won't matter within half a decade. It will be one big pipe. We already watched this happen with the phone company. They're moving slower because there's kind of more of a the infrastructure is more conservative, but the motion, the things are in motion to get rid of what's called POTS, plain old telephone service, and go to basically voice over IP for everything. Before, when you picked up a phone, it set up the network from your phone. You had a network connection that went all the way through to the other phone, where now, and it was all continuous, essentially, switched that way. And now that's going to change to a TCP/IP type voice over IP connection that'll replace phones. That's phones have already been pretty much once data passed them, which was, I think, in the late 90s, that started changing the phone business. But the TV business apparently is going to change even faster. And that is the news.
All right, back to the show.
So, yeah, how many cord cutters? I cut the cord. I don't have cable or satellite or any of that. Nope. I just have an internet connection now.
Same. Haven't had cable since 2002.
There you go. Jay's still. You've got it. You still have a regular.
I love my bandwidth to bankruptcy.
He's got a huge cord. Not going to be cutting that anytime soon.
Cut that cord.
It's a fat pipe.
Cut the fat.
Jay's got a fat pipe going to the house.
Well, we've all got the fat pipe, but it's that cable TV cord that we've weaned ourselves off of. Or at least we should.
Well, right now I need a solution that works for the other members of my household.
Right.
All the giraffes.
That's true.
They're not very clever when it comes. Okay, so I could save myself some money by sitting down and creating a very visual document with labeled remotes. Uh-huh. Say, if you want to do this. But I don't know.
Odds of success?
Odds of success are...
Depends on how bad she wants to watch TV. what's coming on. I'll figure this out.
Well, I did get her to the... I have a Plex server set up in the house, and I set up...
It's good. My wife loves Plex.
I put the Plex app. I bought the Plex app because all the other DLNA or whatever apps suck. But the Plex app works pretty well.
It does.
And so I've got stuff loaded on the server, and I've got the Plex, and she started to use that to watch content. And conceivably, I suppose, if I wanted to manage the library... In that way, I could find digital copies of all the stuff she wants to watch. She watches Netflix. She does well with that. Now she's using Plex on her iPad.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, slowly, the progression's there. I mean, it's happening. Yeah, it's happening.
It's happening. But for she's now, I still need the fat pipe.
Can't really watch can't watch the Rockets game if you've cut the cord. I understand. I think they got kicked off like 30 minutes ago. Is that right?
Oh wow.
I think so.
Is it underway? Yeah,
I watched all of them up to eight. This one.
Let's see.
On I think it's Sling TV. It's for...
Yeah, I thought they started at 8:00 tonight.
It could be.
Yeah, they're in the first quarter. Rockets are up 13-12 against the Warriors.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
Sports ball. I'm a sports ball guy here.
I just don't think that we're fielding the team that's going to break the unbreakable record.
Well, you know, we'll have to see.
You know, never underestimate the heart of a champion, or so it goes.
It'll be, I mean, if they're down three, the Warriors have three. So, I mean, if they, it's like Rockets will have to do four in a row. And like you said, that has, in the semifinals, has never happened before. So we will see.
I mean, it'd be
Nice. Because they weren't even supposed to, you know, they weren't even supposed to be to the finals.
Yeah, Lakers were supposed to have wiped them out and... screw you, Los Angeles.
No, it wasn't the Lakers. Wasn't it was the Clippers.
I don't know. Whatever.
Sports team.
No, it wasn't. Wait a minute.
We did not play the Lakers in the playoffs.
I don't know.
I think it was the Clippers.
We played the Dallas Mavericks in the first round.
There you go.
The Los Angeles Clippers in the second round, and now it's the Bay City Rollers.
Oh, yeah, okay. Los Angeles Clippers. Clippers, Lakers. I mean, literally, it's the same thing to me.
That's,
I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about.
Steve Ballmer doesn't own the Lakers. He owns the Clippers.
Make it to the finals and play the Mighty Ducks.
I don't know. It's the same. It's the same stupid city.
Yeah, but eventually, they're just all the basketball teams. They're all going to be in New York City and L.A., and then there'll be a couple in Texas.
Yes.
seems to be where it's going. There'll just be 20 different LA teams that maybe they'll keep their mascot names, because you know the Lakers are from Minnesota, because may have guessed that California's not a big lake state. It's not known for its lakes, unlike the land of 10,000 lakes, Minnesota.
Anyway, that's so, what's going on. If you are a cord cutter, although watching sports is getting easier, it's still not anywhere as easy as just turning the TV on, which you can do now with, you know, cable or satellite.
That would be interesting if the Texans moved.
Well,
to Tennessee?
The Oilers when they went to Tennessee, though.
You know what they would do is they would move to Tennessee and then they'd go win a Super Bowl out there, probably, honestly.
They'd change their name to the Titans.
Yeah. The
on cord cutting, more towards the geeky topic. The thing is, you know, regular people cutting it, you know, the adults like us, I have kids who are in the tween and teen years, and their consumption of media is completely different than it used to be. They really don't watch TV at all.
No,
it's
they
all
just, they
don't screens,
even sex
YouTube.
And Snapchat each
they
other.
They don't even understand that commercials exist.
No, they do, because it's the thing you hit skip this ad on the front of your YouTube video. You know, there's a lot more on the ones, you know, the thing is there are these YouTube, there some people are just giant on YouTube, and there's lots of commercials on their stuff, because that's where YouTube's attempting to make money. The thing that amazes me, one of the things that I never would have predicted is the huge popularity of basically people where they play through video games and react to it, and people watch videos of them playing the games
now,
and reacting to
it. I watch sometimes I'll watch videos like that. If it's like a game that I haven't played, and I'm like, I wonder what this game is like. But even then, I try to, like, find the channels where there's people that are playing the game without talking. And, like, my impression of how what all the kids are doing these days is, like, the commentary and the guys with the personality, it's not just guys, the people with the personalities that are, like, providing, you know, hilarious commentary and everything over the game, like PewDiePie and those kind of guys. That's, like, what everybody's watching. And that, I don't know, I'm just a little too old, because when I'm watching, like, a game, like, a new whatever game comes out, and I don't want to go spend the $50 and buy it, but I want to see it, I'll try to find the Let's Play video, but I don't want the guy talking over it. I want to see the game so I can decide if it's a game I want to play or not. Not like watch some crazy Swedish dude be all like, PewDiePie, while he's like playing Minecraft.
I knew eventually you'd have to say it like he says.
PewDiePie.
He's sort of the king of that. He's got millions of followers.
He is the, I mean, he makes, revenue wise, he's making millions of dollars. It's hilarious and kind of like makes you wonder what you're doing with your life.
I could play video games and talk about, I could annoy people.
Yeah, but you got to hook those teens. That's what the advertising dollars are.
Yeah, really. Well, so yeah, some of them, I end up seeing, the only time that my kids use a big screen is when they hook up, they use the Wii U to play YouTube videos on the TV, so that they can, you know, and the reason they do that is so they can multi-slack, so that they can have that video on while they use an iPad or their phone and either text or do something else while they're also watching the other video.
It's totally weird to see this, because I feel like, you know, every generation is different or whatever, and what we did when I was growing up in the 80s is very different from what my parents did. But it almost feels like right around that smartphone revolution time, like that 2005 to 2008, like a wall came down. And like, if you like were old enough to be able to use electronics prior to about the invention of the iPhone, you grew up one way. And if now you're old enough to like, if you're young enough to where your formative years were spent like post smartphone, you grew up in this absolutely completely different way of like a world with multiple screens where your primary media intake is stuff like YouTube, and you spend so much more time immersed and not just, I mean, texting is what old people do. Kids now are using WhatsApp and Snapchat and all these other apps that I don't even know about because I'm not young enough to get into like the chat rooms where they talk about this kind of stuff. It just feels like there's such an insurmountable barrier between the stuff that I did when I was growing up with, you know, BBSs and stuff. And now what kids are doing now, even teenagers are doing now, if you hit your formative stride post-smartphone, your world growing up is so just almost unfathomable to me, at least. I don't know. I guess I'm getting old.
Well, at least this way we can look forward to our elder years being kind of passing in a kind of acid dream type haze of not understanding what the hell's going on.
No, they'll just the younger generations will throw us in the old folks' home, slap Oculus Rifts on our heads, and just allow us to float off into
live in the 80s.
Into VR in the 80s all day long and go to the cafe 80s like in Back to the Future 2.
Well, and they're trying to hurry and build the self-driving car so that they don't have to actually, you know, go with to drop us off at the, you know, that way they don't even have to come with.
Just put Grandpa in the car. Put Grandpa Peter in the car and hit the go button.
Wait, who's going to drive this?
Just shut up, Grandpa.
Sending you to a nice, it's a farm. There's a meadow where you can play.
There's good internet access on the farm. It'll just be like
won't
the 80s.
It won't be Soylent Green. It's going to be a combination of like Hunger Games and Back to the Future 2.
Yes. You can, all of the things from your youth you can have in the old folks' home. That's kind of funny, too. I mean, think about what magical things we'll have in our retirement homes when we're old. Instead of all the pictures up on the wall of all of our relatives, we'll have our old, like, Android and iPhones that are 10 years out of date with all of the pictures of our relatives on them.
The kids will be looking at, how come these don't move? You know, they'll have the Harry Potter, you know, magical moving around pictures.
Why don't you have the thought interface on your phone? Well, because when I was younger, we used touch screens with our phones. Thought interfaces were just too hard for me. I'm too
that's
old
why
to learn new things.
That's why there's fingerprints all over the thought interfaces, damn it. Grandpa's been trying to touch screens.
Jeez, Grandpa, are you trying to swipe on my mind phone? You just think left or right. Stop touching
touch
it.
My mind phone. Don't touch my mind phone. Mind the mind phone.
Oh man! So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what we'll be railing against the kids. Although I guess we won't be telling them to get out of our yard. Maybe they'll invent virtual children that'll go in your yard so that you can have the opportunity to yell at them.
No, we'll have yards will be patrolled by drones in the future, so we won't have to worry about that. We'll have like rock salt firing drones to we won't hurt the kids. It'll just give them a little sting when they get on your property.
No, they'll say. Ooh, you have real grandparents?
Ooh, flesh relatives. Yuck. My robo grandpa can run 80 miles an hour.
or when you finally see your grandchild in person, they like the virtual presence, you know, the iPad on a stick with a Roomba at the bottom that they were seeing more than you. Where's my real grandpa?
Yeah,
he's bumping around in the corner because there he got caught.
Teleparents.
I've seen those telepresence robots, like the iPads on wheels things. They're like surprisingly creepy. I mean, it's funny and everything. Like I ran into them for the first time at CES a couple of years ago. There was one of the companies that makes them. I think the company is called Beam, BEAM, Beam. They had a big booth. And they were showing off their robots. So they had, like, in another part of the show or back at their hotels or whatever, they had, like, 5 or 6 employees that were, like, logged into these robots that were, like, just like, going around the show floor. And you'd, like, look behind you, like, you'd hear this noise and turn around behind you, and there's, like, this very attractive lady's face on an iPad on this robot on wheels that's following you around, and you turn around and you're like, ah, and she's like, hi, would you like to know more about like the company that I work for with these telepresence robots? Like following you.
Okay. I just thought of a great mashup.
Okay.
Telepresence robots and real dolls.
Like the real doll with the iPad face.
Yes.
It's gross, Jim.
That'll
why
be
you gotta make it gross?
I was watching the Yahoo season of Community, which is really very good. Surprisingly, they did a good job, even though it's internet only. A lot of things when they're sentenced to Netflix or whatever don't always turn. You know, when they're broadcast before, and then they kind of get picked up in the last season.
Yeah, I
hear that
Arrested Development was not very good.
It wasn't
that
great, but Community is really good. And they had an episode where they were going to get money from the government to host telepresence students from the prison.
Okay,
one of the teachers alienated one of the students and. The telepresence robot greets him in the parking lot of the parking or in the parking garage, and then tells him he's a murderer. And he says, go look down those stairs. I think I saw something. And he goes and looks at the telepresence robot. So go down the stairs. And then they end up in a fight between they have a crude made telepresence robot with a broomstick and. They kind of have a prison fight.
Sharpened up into like a stake.
A shiv.
All
right.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Think about the future of long distance relationships when you've got the real doll with the iPad face. So you're talking to your significant other remotely, and she's like, "Are you even listening to me?" Because they're anyways. Or then you get a call from your mom.
I've got my hand over the red button, that. Peter.
Different number, Pete.
But, yeah, never mind.
Never mind.
Anyway, so the future is going to be a lot. The future is going to be a lot weirder than we.
Oh, we're buying that.
Than we can imagine.
That's a buy. Did we have a? Well, I mean, okay. So not to leave this fascinating topic of telepresence sex robots, but the big thing that you didn't hit it in the news section, so I want to bring it up because we're, you know, 15 minutes left in the hour, is tomorrow is the kickoff of Google I/O. So there's going to be all kinds of magical, mystical Android, Chrome, and Google-related news coming out tomorrow. So pretty
and
much,
rumor is that it's all made of cardboard.
Yeah, well, they'll have stuff there about that. More than likely, all the big tech sites have been pre-briefed. My guys have been briefed, and they'll be as soon as all the embargoes lift, the news will flood out like a torrent tomorrow morning after the keynote. I have not been part of that briefing because I'm an editor, so I don't have to actually know anything. So word is we'll get the development version of the new version of Android, Android M, and nobody knows what the M stands for. So the L, when it eventually came out, was Lollipop, of course. And so everyone's kind of wondering, like, what's Android M going to be? Is it going to be like Android Marshmallow, or is it going to be Android Macadamia Nut Cookies, or what? So
Mars Bar,
Android Mars Bars. So no word yet on what the code name for the new version of Android is, but it will be Android M. We'll have, you know, Google's been doing its trend because unlike Apple, you know, Google is dependent upon sort of the goodwill of both the device manufacturers and the cell carriers when they're pushing out updates to Android. It's not at all uncommon for especially if you get like a subsidized Android phone from a carrier, a cell carrier, that the version of Android that you get on that will lag 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, major revisions like past what the current version of Android is. And so for the past couple of years, Google has kind of been doing this thing where it's bundling more and more of Android's central features, not in the front end of Android, but it's pulling things into kind of the Google side, kind of the API and the guts, which enables it to roll out features by changing stuff on its end rather than changing stuff like that doesn't require whole OS updates. It's kind of a way to make an end run around the carriers who are notoriously slow in releasing updates, and the manufacturers who are notoriously slow in releasing updates. So a new version of Android doesn't necessarily have as much of an impact as a new version of iOS, but it is still a big deal. So we'll probably hear about that starting tomorrow. Google is going to be doing a bunch of other stuff. It's possible, likely, I would say, that we'll get a new updated version of a Chromecast, which should be kind of interesting because the first Chromecast is neat and all, but it's beginning to show its age a little bit. There's some speculation that Google is going to drop like a big like wearable thing, and not like dumb wearable like Google Glass, but like a cool, neat wearable. No actual solid news on what it might be, but it might be something neat.
I've heard it's Google Hot Pants.
Nice. Sign me up. I want the extra large size. And they've got a bunch of other stuff that'll happen too. All that news is probably going to start dropping if you use the internet at all. Probably sometime around 9:30 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow. That's when the keynote kicks off. If you're keeping an eye on basically any tech news site on the entire internet, you will notice sort of an explosion of news right about then as the embargoes all lift and like everybody dumps everything that they know and have pre-written. So tomorrow will be like a very heavy Google day, and there'll be all kinds of Google and Chrome and neat stuff all having to do on the Google Android Chrome side of the house. So it'll be neat. It's always cool when Google does these events. There's usually neat stuff. Hopefully we'll hear about a new Nexus device, too. Everybody likes Nexus stuff.
Yay. Yeah. And the best part is by doing it on a Thursday, by the next time we roll around, everybody's going to be, like, bored and, oh, really? I already heard about that when we get to the next show.
There is, one of the things on this list here this may or may not show up tomorrow. It's in kind of the rumor thing, but it is Google is rumored to be getting ready to announce a heavy competitor to Twitch.tv. Twitch.tv, kind of tying back into our discussion about...
Not to be confused with Twitchy.com.
Right. No, Twitch.tv is the It's the game streaming site that everybody uses. So Google, there was actually a time when the rumor mill was going hot and heavy that Google and YouTube was going to buy Twitch. And of course they didn't. Twitch ended up being picked up by Amazon, crazily enough. It's a weird platform. Twitch generates a tremendous amount of revenue because it has a tremendous amount of eyeballs glued to it, you know, all the time. And pretty much anybody, you know, you sitting at home right now, if you wanted to become an internet celebrity, you could sign up for a Twitch.tv account and start streaming yourself playing video games. You might not necessarily pick up a gigantic following unless you've got some kind of unique, cool hook. Like if you are a, you know, Swedish crazy person or, you know, like a hot girl who's willing to game naked or something. But it's like this, so this huge platform, and YouTube doesn't really have anything competitive. And Google is never really one to let a market like that sit without trying to make a play in it. So having not bought Twitch.tv, it's expected that they will possibly tomorrow, possibly at some point over I.O. and maybe a little later announce that they're going to have their own competitor to it branded with YouTube instead. So who knows? We'll see. Then there's smart home stuff and Project Aura, which was that like modular phone thing. And there's just all kinds of neat stuff that should be coming out over the next week or so. News of, announcements of, not the actual things themselves. It's never the actual things. It's always the news and the announcements of.
Yeah, and they'll announce how long you're going to have to wait before you actually could buy whatever device or get it rolled out.
Forever. Well,
on the iOS side, on Bite of the Apple, one of the interesting ones, you know, because they're coming up on WWDC in a few weeks. So rumors are coming out about the next generation of iOS. And one of a rumor that hopefully is real and positive because it's more positive, is that apparently 9to5 Mac says that there's a handful of features, the most interesting of which is a note about support for older devices. It sounds like that iOS 9 is going to help out of production devices like the iPhone 4S and potentially like the iPad 2 to continue to be useful.
Yeah. Now that's really
normally
interesting.
iOS supports four iPhone generations at a time, but iOS 9 could go back to the 4S right up to whatever gets introduced this year.
Now we've been, Ars Technica, we have been very consistent in testing new versions of iOS with older phones and iPads too, to actually vet in the real world what Apple says. And exactly what you said, Peter, it's been holding pretty much exactly like that. You can install iOS 8 on an iPhone 4S. If you just really want to, you can. It'll work, but it won't work very well. And my wife has got an iPad 2, and we've got iOS 8 on it, and it's just not terribly snappy. You know, it just doesn't have that pep. So this is a really good, I think this is great, honestly, because just from a hardware perspective, an iPad 2 is not this is not a bad device. An iPhone 4S is not a bad device at all. And I mean, if you bought it off contract, you're talking about a device that is not that old, 4 years old. What is it? Is it 4 years old? 3 or 4 years old, that you might have paid $600 for. So extending the life of that through software, I think, is a really good idea. And it kind of goes against the popular image of Apple, which is, you know, planned obsolescence, buy the shiny box, and in 2 years, throw it out for the new shiny box. But I think this is a good
thing. It's a smart move on their part, because I guarantee you a large number of those, like, iPhone 4Ss got handed down to people's kids, and they don't want the kid to be useless. You know, and they don't want it to, you know, the parents don't want, you know, they bought that phone, and then when they get a new one, you hand it down the pipeline. The hardware is still good. You know, I still have the 4S. You know, one of my kids is using the 4S that I bought when they first came out. And everything works fine. The battery life is good and all that. And it makes sense, you know, to play the long game, because those kids are going to grow up wanting iPhones. If you can hand it down,
yep.
It's one of those indirect things, but it's a way to win.
Does Apple still have a rev share thing with the carriers where they get a cut, or has that expired out? I know that was a big deal with AT&T originally. I don't remember if they're actually getting any money this time around from cell bills and data charges or not.
I don't know. I know that one thing that came out on for AT&T, a change that they're making is, I guess at least with iOS devices, they're not going to allow third parties to do two-year contracts anymore. You'll have to actually go to AT&T to do it. You want, and the manufacturers won't be able to subsidize those two-year plans that come from somebody else, like Best Buy or whoever. So that's kind of a big change in how the business works.
Well, you
the other rumor, about the next iPhone. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
Is that it's going? You know, of course they always there's only so much left to, if you really look at it on iOS on the phones and stuff. Other than stuff that's I call them the effects. You know, lighter, thinner. You know, higher res. Those kinds of things, you know, are always – that's always a thought about that's something they could do. But, like, new features or really pushing a feature to a different level, there's not a lot left except the camera. And so the new rumor is that the next-gen iPhone will get a 12-megapixel Sony sensor that uses Sony's RGBW technology to help with low-light photography.
Now, that would be interesting, because that's wading straight into the territory that – Lumia, or by Microsoft, I guess now, since they bought Nokia, has been using to differentiate themselves. That's one of the few things that like the Lumia devices have been able to definitively say, look, we rock way harder than any iOS device.
And there had been some rumors or thoughts of a possible dual camera setup with wide angle and telephoto lenses, but the sources say that the RGBW means an alleged switch to smaller pixels won't come at the expense of low light stuff, and so they'd go with one camera.
All right, well, that music in the background you hear is our signal that we need to take a short break and attend to some station business.
Business.
So that's what we're going to do.
Let's do it.
You're listening to Technology Bytes. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Plicted.
I'm Lee.
And he's
Gruvelos.
We'll be back after these messages.
KPFT is seeking prospective volunteers to help in our music library. Our music library is a massive resource for our DJs and listeners. Volunteers will be assigned a number of different tasks, from refiling CDs to converting music for inclusion into the upgrade of our music library focused on digital. We're also looking for people who can spot up-and-coming bands to feature on our HD3 music stream. Successful volunteers will be team players who work well with others, have the ability to alphabetize, and can manage multiple tasks. Shifts happen weekdays, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. This is an unpaid unpaid volunteer gig, but it is one of the most fun times ever for anyone into music, music discovery, and turning others on to outstanding music. Interested? Drop an email to music@kpft.org with the subject line Music Volunteer. We'll take it from there. This is 90.1 FM, KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.
Three sad facts. All over the world, more than 80% of forest cover has been lost to deforestation. Topsoil is lost much faster than it's being created, and a half of all species are threatened with extinction, mainly by industrial activity. Until now, for the past 300 million years, about one species was going extinct every 4 years. But now, scientists see one species go extinct every 15 minutes. This environmental destruction can only be changed when you act. Deep Green Resistance says standing up and speaking out is the only hope for our planet. To learn more, visit deepgreenresistance.org. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston, and now back to the show.
Welcome back to Technology Bites, everyone. We're so glad you're here. All right, so next up on the agenda.
Agenda.
What do we have?
Barrett time.
Oh, yeah, Barrett time.
How do you say Barrett time in Italian? What is, like,
no. Gelato.
Gelato.
Vespa.
Mangia gelato.
Molto Vespa.
Hold on, let's go to translate.google.com. Let's see. What is time?
Money.
Hmm.
Dinero.
Brilliant.
Dinero.
H-I-J. Italian. Tempo. Tempo di Barrett.
Tempo. Tempo of...
Okay, well, I guess we don't have that, so we do have
or it could
have
be... No, wait, it could
fry.
Be... It could be Momento di Barrett. I like that. Momento di Barrett. Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Try by our
fry. The Fresh Maker.
See a Mentos commercial film
after
in Italian.
Following Barrett's trip on social media, it looks like he's having a heck of a time, and I really feel for him after spending weeks doing this. I don't know how he's going to how well he's going to integrate back into civilian normal life.
Well, let me speak from experience and say it can be done. It's never pleasant. But I'm really glad that Barrett has taken the time off. I think, you know, he works really hard. A lot of times after the show, he'll go back to work. And he hasn't taken any significant time off, so good for him.
Well, isn't he going straight, like, to DEF CON, like, right after this? That's coming
up. Oh, no,
right?
Not at all. That's DEF CON's not till August.
I've got this, like, DEF CON perpetually coming is it DEF CON next yet? Week in my mind.
All right, well, one thing that Lee... mentioned in the prior hour was about how, you know, Google I/O is coming up, and what happens is just like when a big wave, like when a tidal wave is coming, the tide, you know, the water kind of goes out away from shore in that moment before the big wave hits. That's what happens on new stuff. Is the all the oxygen gets sucked out of the news sphere. And nobody wants to announce their new thing that's going to get washed out by whatever big event, like when Microsoft is going to have a big event, or Apple, you know, WWDC, or their keynote kind of stuff. So it's kind of thin. But I got a few things. One is if you want to pass for a geek, this tool might help you. If you're watching the Marvel Universe and you haven't been a comic book geek for a while, there is now Marvel facilitated this by opening up its API to developers. There is a Marvel Universe search engine, so that you can go and type in the name of a character. Or other Marvel, you know, or a specific title, and it will give you at least enough information to kind of pass for a comic book nerd if you really need to. Hmm. It's at imarvel.co.
iPoser
is where you where you go for it. So that way, you know, this one's for all you ladies who are like dating a guy who, you know, knows when free comic book day is, or who knows when the new comics come in at the comic book store. You can like use your phone and maybe bookmark that, and you can like look stuff up and then say something really obscure about subjects that, that your guy is really into. And if he says, "I didn't know that," then it's kind of like in Monty Python on the Holy Grail, you know, what is your quest?
Because if they need an app to get in cool, you know, say something cool to their boyfriend, they're going to get the Monty Python reference.
That's right. Sure.
Well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, when you get into comic book universes,
that's true.
That gets,
that's true.
That one, the rabbit hole goes a lot farther than the Matrix.
Hey, Peter, I think there's something wrong with this Marvel search engine, because I just tried to search on The Flash. I didn't find anything. And then I tried to search on Superman and didn't have anything on Superman either. So what kind of, like, gypped comic book search engine is this, man? What are you selling?
Well, I guess you have to try it and see if you can find something you like. See if Ant-Man's in there.
They don't have anything on Batman either. No Batman, no Flash, and no Superman.
No Superman. Well, I guess now we need a search engine to tell people about the difference between DC and Marvel. For those of you at home who don't get the joke, that's the two biggies is DC and Marvel, and Disney owns Marvel. And so that's the Avengers and Iron Man and all those, and then Superman and Batman.
So Peter, I have to tell you, my wife just texted me and she says, "I'm offended that you think girls need this to impress guys. I know more about comics than my husband does." And she's so right. So now you have to apologize to Laura.
Okay. I apologize. I just figured I'm playing the odds here. The highest likelihood is that, anybody who has a significant other who's that into comics, could be useful.
Apologizing to Laura is also what we call the life of Lee.
No, I just try not
in
to.
Other products. There's been so much about it, and it's finally. Sounds like there's actually going to be products to figure stuff out with it, but you know, there's getting to be more glimpses. Apple and Google both have in-car things, basically.
Yes.
Integration where your iPhone or your Android phone will work better with your car if the manufacturer puts in the technology. There's CarPlay, which is Apple's, and Android Auto. Are kind of the two main ones. They're not mainstream yet, but manufacturers have started to give us a glimpse of how the features are going to work. Most automakers are expected to support either CarPlay or Android Auto, even though others like Toyota apparently aren't going with either. Chevrolet, though, announced today that 14 of its 2016 models, including cars, trucks, and crossovers, will be compatible with both CarPlay and Android Auto, so that to make it easy for people who enjoy either platform, you know, to use the platform they prefer. What it means is you don't have to worry about choosing one over the other. Instead, the Chevy system is going to be compatible with both simultaneously.
You know, I'd like to see that. I would like to see all of the infotainment stuff thrown to Apple and Google for them to handle, not just like the infrastructure side of it, but for them to handle the UI side of it too. Because I swear I've driven just about everything that there is drivable in the US. So, you know, I've driven Fords, Chevys, BMWs, Toyotas, Hondas, Acuras, Lexuses, and every single one of them, Audi especially, every single one of them have infotainment systems that are terrible from a UI.
Yeah, it's kind of like the 1980s of computing in the interface world of cars.
I mean, and they all do amazing stuff if you can fight your way through just the garbage interface that they wrap them in.
Yeah, and you'd think that with the demonstration of how touchscreens should work that's been happening, you know, in little devices that you can carry around in your pocket
for
how many years now? 8 years? Something like that, that they would be doing better in cars, and they really have mostly come up short.
Yeah. No, the only car I've been happy with from a usability perspective has been the Tesla that I have driven, that I was driving last weekend. The UI in there.
You mean the one that costs as much as a house?
Yeah, the $130,000 optioned out crazy one they loaned me to test. The UI on the dash in that, absolutely amazing, worked great. But, you know, that's not a you can't really call it a mainstream car. You need companies that specialize in you know, mobile UIs like Apple and Google to be designing these things, because they make stuff that works. Even, you know, everybody thinks there's issues with iOS and with Android. There's usability problems. But, man, I would pick that over anything in any car I've ever driven, hands down, any day.
The sad thing is that, you know, Chevy, I think, is making the right choice by supporting both, by kind of treating it as more of an API-style approach, as opposed to choosing one or the other, where it gets into that you have to then know which type of device you like to use. Because there's plenty, you know, yes, we geeks know which phone we use, but there's a lot of people who just bought their smartphone. If you ask them what kind of phone they have, they'll tell you the manufacturer.
A red one, a white one.
Yeah, it's one of them rectangular ones. No, but they'll say like LG or Samsung. They don't know what operating system it runs. They don't really care, because it just works.
Only thing worse than paying, you know, $1,500 for the navigation option in your car is to pay $1,500 for the navigation option in your car that won't work unless you also go buy a new different smartphone.
Right. It's one of those that's kind of sad, and that's something that hopefully, like I said, hopefully Chevy will set a good example, and we'll be looking forward to seeing how it works with both devices. Well, and plus you can get where people don't, you know, they don't all have the same device, and two people sharing, that switch off on a car, or when you use your significant other's car, you don't want to have to like get their phone too to make the radio work.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess finally, this one's interesting. You just wonder, is it going to be like their other products, cheap and breaks down, but people do it because of the cheap price? Walmart is apparently gearing up to compete with Amazon Prime, a 3-day shipping service. They accidentally put the site live and people could see it for a short period of time. It's called Shipping Pass. During the brief time the link was live, shoppers were able to sign up and even place orders using it, and were able to see which types of items were included in the program, as well as which geographies Shipping Pass served, among other things. They also found the service would include free shipping on a number of items beyond those that could ship in 3 days' time. So apparently this was part of Walmart's alpha and was not meant to be distributed. The price of the service that was advertised in the internal site was $1 a year, which is not what they're expecting. There's a new waitlist page for Walmart's Shipping Pass that says it's $50 per year when it goes live for unlimited shipping. Oh, and here's – if you ever stumble across these kind of test sites – and go, oh, we shouldn't sign up, they're just testing it. Walmart emailed the people who managed to sign up over the weekend to apologize and explain, and credited them with a $50 gift card due to the confusion. So that's worth signing up for something for free. But this was revealed earlier this year. It was described as a pilot program meant to collect user feedback and determine consumer interest in a shipping program. It's going to run alongside a number of other e-commerce experiments at Walmart, including online ordering with curbside pickup, as well as home delivery options, both of which are available only in select U.S. markets. The Shipping Pass website explained to customers via its FAQ that the new service would only be available in limited geographies due to pilot testing. So that didn't give a good hint about where it's going to be. Here's some things that were interesting that would have more bearing on the larger project. The 3-day delivery was only guaranteed when orders were placed by noon your local time. For example, if you order by noon on Monday, your package would arrive by Thursday. which Amazon Prime is what, 2-day deliveries. And if you order it before like late afternoon, I believe they say it'll be there within 2 days.
They're starting to get a little less.
So if you did it on Monday, you could get it on Wednesday.
I don't know. I mean, so I've got kind of mixed feelings about this. I mean, obviously, if you're buying from Walmart or Amazon, for that matter, there are a lot of moral issues that you have to be okay with. So setting the morality of purchasing from Walmart or Amazon aside for a minute and looking at this purely from a, you know, logistical and technical decision, Amazon's pretty much proven that they've got the logistical ability and the chops to, if I order a thing on Amazon, I am 99% sure I'm going to get the thing I ordered when they say I'm going to get it. And if something is screwed up, the return process, I don't know, Peter, if you've returned anything through Amazon recently, the return process is absolutely painless. Whereas, I don't know, I mean, I know Walmart is, you know, the case study that you look at in business school whenever you look at how to, like, expand out a global distribution chain and all that stuff, but I just don't know if I would trust them to do as good of a job in getting me what I ordered when I want it, and if they've screwed it up in taking it back. I mean, I don't know what their value prop is that's going to lure me away from Amazon.
I don't think going to the stores gives you that feeling of confidence.
No, it absolutely doesn't. It just, especially, I mean, with curbside pickup or whatever, that means you're going to be interacting with the local stores. And I don't want to, you know, people who work at Walmart are people and they've got jobs, but it just seems like they're usually really busy. And, like, I wouldn't want to have to go rely on them for curbside pickup because I don't know how long I'd be waiting.
And or sometimes very disinterested.
Well, yeah, you know, I mean.
Yeah, I think they're based on their pricing, you know, basically doing the having it be $50 a year. I think they're going for people who go exclusively by the what's the total price. The thing that's fascinating, the reason I wanted to bring it in, mm-hmm. And talk about it is because it's going to be fascinating to watch the battle. I mean, the retail landscape, at least right now, I think most betting people would say it comes down to Walmart and Amazon as to who's going to be the big winner in the, you know, near term, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating. Walmart, you know, if you think about it, I think they're putting on a clinic on how not to do it. Frankly, Amazon, you know, gives you something that's fairly that's better than you might pay for yourself. You know, in other words, half the time if you ordered something on Amazon prior to Amazon Prime, when you looked at the shipping cost, you might say, yeah, no, I don't need that in 2 days. I'll just take the free or take the longer. Well, and so the Prime thing, you kind of go, okay, well, if I ordered 3 or 4 things in a year, I can, this pays for itself just in the shipping.
I feel like Walmart, I'm still up from like 2 years ago when I upgraded my home theater system. I ordered everything on Amazon and it ended up weighing like 250 pounds and I got it free 2-day shipping. I think I like got like 3 years worth of Prime out of that just by that one purchase.
There you go. And you think about, you know, Amazon has distribution centers, but not as many distribution centers as, you know, I mean, Walmart has all that infrastructure to move all this stuff around, but they don't seem to be able to be as agile because their whole orientation has been the old model, the old, you know, move it to warehouses, move it from the warehouses to the stores, get it on the shelves and get it out. Because if you thought of, you know, if they really did the curbside thing, or if their infrastructure was faster and more agile, Amazon, they could have really given Amazon a run for their money, but the way the plan is spec'd right now, I think you raised all the points that kind of would count against it, because I don't know if a lot of their users are going to be sort of conscious of their thought is they go to Walmart, that going there is part of the deal, and they don't care about saving the trip. Especially since the areas, you know, if it's only going to be in limited areas, it's not like it's going to be everywhere. The places where it would matter, like people who are way out in rural areas, mm-hmm. who, if you got it delivered, it would be a big, you know, save them the 40-mile drive or whatever. They're not going to be the ones that get that.
They're already buying their dry goods on Amazon and having UPS bring it out to them or whatever.
And so it's sort of funny because at Walmart, you know, is likely in this to give up their place where they kind of built their, you know, built their base that's unlikely to serve them, and then they're going to try and compete in the cities where people are going to be more sophisticated about it, and they don't want to buy a $7 shovel that's going to break the second time they use it, even if it's going to be delivered free within 4 days. I think that gets are 3 days, except it's they count the days, you know, everything cuts Walmart's way, you know, ordered on Monday by noon. So if you woke up in the morning and knew to order it, you could have it on Thursday. I think that, you know, that's pretty weak.
That's kind of like, I remember when video rentals and the big companies were Blockbuster and Hollywood. And of course, Blockbuster was more widespread. Hollywood was cutting in on their territory, and Hollywood had 5-day rentals on old movies and 2-day rentals on new movies, and like Blockbuster, which everything was 1 day. So then Blockbuster came out with this campaign to compete with Hollywood. And so, you know, Hollywood is 2-day rental, 5-day rental. So Blockbuster put out their advertising blitz was two evening rental, 5-evening rental. And so there was a Blockbuster near me that was closer than Hollywood. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll do that. And so I did it, and I had the movie it was an older movie. I had it for like, you know, the fifth day. I was calculating. I'm like, oh, today's the fifth day. I got to return it. And I went to return it, and they were like, oh, you owe a late fee. And I'm like, what? What are you? It's a 5-day rental. This is the fifth day. And they're like, no, it's a 5-evening rental. And the day that you rent it counts as the first evening. So it's really a four-day rental, but they call it a 5-evening rental. Oh, that made me mad. So anyway, yeah, to me, this kind of feels like that. Like they're trying to compete, but they're like tweaking all the definitions so that it looks like they really compete, but they're actually not quite competing.
Yeah, and I think Walmart, in this day and age, I think even, you know, as more and more people are hooked up to the internet and all those kinds of things, and with Amazon already existing with a nationwide program doing the same thing, it's pretty sad to come out with this kind of half-assed, maybe you can fool people into thinking they're getting the same thing for $30 less approach. It's just kind of in a sense, it's sort of sad, but it's also interesting to watch them try to make the elephant dance, you know, and try to compete with the kind of lighter and more agile Amazon, which Amazon, you know, by name, they're a Leviathan, they're huge, but they're designed to run in a way that works towards the future, or at the very least, Bezos forces them to, I guess, why they don't make a lot of money.
They've always designed runaround shipping. I mean, that was like one of the main models of theirs was shipping, like, you know, through whoever to customers' doors. So
yeah,
that's not really Walmart's.
No, but where before. Walmart has you know, historically has a notorious advantage is in supplier leverage. Walmart, you know,
it's a just in time. Yeah,
they will absolutely, you know, when I've read a lot of stuff and seen a lot of documentaries that getting, if you're a goods producer or a wholesaler or whatever, getting your goods picked up by Walmart is both the most wonderful and most terrible thing that can happen to you, because on the good side, you're going to get Walmart shelf space, and that's, you know, the most amazing thing ever. You're going to sell product. On the bad side, Walmart will negotiate your price down. And I mean, you think that the dance that a car dealership puts you through is bad. You know, you fly out to Bentonville and get sat down in one of those notorious interrogation style negotiation rooms that Walmart uses, and have a Walmart buyer, you know, basically just beat you up for hours and hours and hours on price negotiations.
I've heard they send people out to your factory or whatever, wherever you make it.
Oh, yeah.
And they look at everything, and then they come into the negotiation and say,
you come to them, and you go to Bentonville.
You need to cut this percentage of people. Mm-hmm. You need to change this part of your stuff. You need to cut this price amount. You need to buy this volume from these people to get this price, because we're only going to pay you 17 cents an item instead of your requested 29 cents an item.
That's right. Walmart knows the margin they want to take, and they know, based on the margin they want to take, they figure the margin that you should be okay to accept So that's what I mean. That's where Walmart has leverage far above and beyond. Amazon doesn't do anywhere near that level of supplier negotiation. They don't have to. They make their money in other ways. They've got other stuff going on. But for Walmart, the reason that they are so incredibly, you know, just make all the billions that they make is because they are a powerful negotiator. So that's where they've got their leg up in this whole game. But they don't have that last-mile distribution network either that Amazon does through partnering with UPS, FedEx, whatever the local carrier is.
The other thing I see for Walmart that's going to, you know, that their model where they start running out of road is they calculate the quality down to the minimum viable product, you know, like startups kind of thing. And I don't believe the millennial generation, they're not into that. They seem to be more focused on not, you know, I don't want to overgeneralize, but they more want to have something that's got a certain level of quality that they can count on for a longer time than what you can expect from a lot of the things that you get from Walmart. Because at some point, when you cut the corners down, you cut the margins down, at some point the flour starts getting adulterated with sawdust because that's all you can afford to keep meeting the margins.
Well, and Walmart also has kind of a brand stigma. I mean, we don't need to walk too far down the marketing road here, but Walmart is Walmart, and that brand has a lot of positives associated with it, especially if you are in Arkansas and you are part of the state that's benefited so much from having that presence there, or especially if you're a member of the Walton family and you are a bajignillionaire, but otherwise... exabyte, zettabyte, zettabillionaire. But, I mean, otherwise, Walmart has, you know, carries no small amount of stigma, especially with, you know, the millennial age consumer that, you know, is at least if you go by what all the news sites tell me, is much more environmentally conscious, is much more socially conscious, and maybe is not going to have nearly as easy a time spending money with a Walmart versus spending money with, you know, Amazon, or spending money with whatever startup delivers, you know, groceries from the farmer's market directly to your door using locally sourced guys with cars to carry the stuff to you, you know, whatever. I don't know what all the kids are doing these days.
Just imagine if Walmart had a more Amazon-style mindset, they would have distribution centers within a very short distance. You know, so if they wanted to have next day, the shipping distances could be very short on some of the point-to-point. I mean, obviously, you know, a lot of the, like, if it's FedEx and some of those, it goes through the big hubs. But, you know, Walmart has locations all over the place. And if they treated those as distribution centers for the goods, they could have everything could be very close to your home in the first place, where Amazon is relatively more centralized. But Walmart doesn't seem to be trying, they don't seem oriented on taking advantage of that, and I think you're going to get the result. They're too busy trying to compete with grocery stores on one side and Amazon on the other.
Maybe they could change their name too, like Philip Morris changed their name to Altria or whatever. So maybe Walmart could change their name to some .com Uber friendly startup name.
Like Craptopia.
spin off a totally, like, a wholly owned subsidiary, like Comcast with Xfinity, although Xfinity is just a brand. Fence Smart. No, that sounds like somewhere where you take your stolen cars or your artwork you've yanked from the museum.
I like Craptopia.
Just take it from Instagram.
They could use Wally and register their domain name with Libya.
Oh, hey, there you go. Wall.ly.
And then when they automate and have the robots, everybody would think that it was so cute because it'd be all these little Wallys going around bringing out your merchandise to the curb.
Okay, now if they did that, I would totally, I would sign up. I would be like, hi!
Except you know that Walmart would take it too far, and so the Wally would, like, mash your package into a cube that fits in its body, regardless of the shape of the original package.
Well, it's because he'd be all upset because he can't unionize. He has no healthcare.
He'd come out to the curb and kind of disgorge the cube onto the sidewalk by your car and then drive off.
Of your 24-piece dish set.
Next year, 50-gallon jug of pickles. I I guess that's Costco, though, or Sam's Club. Sam's Club is where you buy your 50-gallon jar of pickles.
From somebody who's as unhappy as a Walmart employee.
Sam's Club.
I like going to Costco. Those people are happy.
Yeah, they are. Do we have one? I know we don't have one down on my side of town. There is one in Houston, though, isn't there?
There's three.
There's several. There's one out by the – there's a new one out by the whatever Grand Parkway and I-10.
That's crazy.
And then there's one –
yeah, and there's one in Sugar Land, and there's one Richmond and
Well, I live down in Clear Lake, so I'm on the
They added a bunch because there was one like by Jersey Village, and then there's one. There's a couple on I-10 heading west from downtown.
Doesn't help me. Build one down where I live.
I'm sure the day is coming. I was thrilled when they built one near where I live.
I can't wait to go to the store and just buy literally one metric ton of toilet paper and just not have to worry about toilet paper for a year.
Just make it into a couch and just use it until it's gone.
Be like, I really want to be able to just check that off so that it's like, we're good. Like toilet paper, we're good. We don't have to worry about that like ever again. That's over now.
On the progress of things blowing me away, and this one, it's from Costco, but it's not specific to them. But the other day I went and they have a 128 gig USB 3 thumb drive there for $40.
Jeez, take that back in time 10 years and really blow your mind.
Yeah, it's just I looked at it because, you know, lately the deals on thumb drives, if you know, the thing you have to look for, the gotcha is if it doesn't say USB 3.0, then you know it's going to get basically the same old
it's
stuff.
It's 128 gigs, but you'll never fill it up because you'll never be able to wait that long.
Right. Or they'll give you a pack of five of those, and it's like, yeah, no, that even if I had the five – USB ports, and I tried to copy two and sort
them together.
the USB thumb drive raid. Somebody needs to invent that one.
I think you know what? I think like Storage Report or somebody did that. They took like a bunch of USB thumb drives and like raided them together just because. And it ended up working great, but you know, for performance, they did it in RAID 0, which is just spanning, and it, you know, you lose one thumb drive out of that RAID array of thumb drives, and all your data is gone.
Right, which, yes, that was my image is, oh, hey, yeah, I just loaded up all this data, and I'm here to give you I've got, you know, this entire digitized movie collection, and, oh, wait, where's drive 4?
Oh, I unplugged it without unmounting it. Oh, my Stripe!
But, yeah, that just kind of, you know, I saw that it was 128 gig USB 3.0, and then I'm looking at what the price is going to be, and it was like, geez, you couldn't get 128 gig hard drive
SSD
for that, you know, a year ago, that kind of thing, that would have been, or a couple of years ago, that would have been $100 just the 128 gig.
No, I did for my closet Linux server I've got that I built in 2012. I got at the time just a super fast SATA 3 Patriot something or other SSD. It was their red brand SSD, so it was super fast SATA 3, and I didn't want to get, like, you know, I didn't want to spend too much on the drive, but I wanted to get something really fast, so I compromised and I got one that was 60 gigs. And this is in 2012 when I bought it, and it wasn't unreasonably priced. It was, you know, I forget what it was at the time. It was $150-$200 for the 60 gig drive, because that was kind of where the price per gig was at the time. God, I look over now and, man, I'm almost, you know, I don't want it to die. I do have backups, but if it does die, I could go buy something that's a lot faster and a lot bigger for a lot cheaper now to replace it.
Yeah, I saw a 500 gig SSD for, it was under $200. It was like 150 or something.
Yeah, nuts. We're not, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever quite hit that low price per gig that we got with hard drives right before the big Thailand factory flood a few years ago. I don't know if we'll ever quite get back down that just absurdly low. Not for some time anyway. But, I mean, it's getting harder and harder to justify buying spinning disk for anything other than archive. If you're buying a computer these days, whether it's a portable or a desktop, whether you're parting it together or buying it from an OEM, if you don't have an SSD in it, you're making a mistake. You need to get one. There's pretty much no excuse at this point. You should have a solid state disk in your computer. And yes, it makes that much of a difference. It really, really does. You might think it won't, but it really, really does.
It's darn close. It's darn close to having it like its RAM.
Remember when doubling your RAM was the thing to do? Mm-hmm. Now it's like just breathe new life into whatever with an SSD drive.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it used to be if you wanted something to go super duper fast, you kind of had to make that trade-off of like, should I sacrifice some RAM and carve out a RAM disk and put this thing on the RAM disk? You don't have to do that anymore. You just get a solid state disk, migrate onto the solid state disk. Your problems are basically over. Even if it's worth getting an SSD almost more than it's worth like doubling your RAM, like period. If you've got 8 gigs of RAM or so, you're probably fine. You'll see more of an improvement out of adding a solid state disk than you would out of adding more RAM. Primarily because when you add the SSD in, even if you fill your physical memory up with whatever you're doing, you know, with all your web pages and whatever you're doing on your computer, if you hit your physical RAM limit and your computer starts swapping, the swapping to the SSD will be so much faster than swapping to the hard drive. It's obviously wouldn't be as fast as if it was all RAM all the time, but it just improves absolutely every aspect of the computer unless you're, you know, a heavy super duty gamer and you need more polygons up on your screen faster. Faster SSD might help with load time, but it won't necessarily help your game run any better. But for basically every casual use case, throwing an SSD in your PC is like the absolute like best thing that you could do. Absolute best thing. Do that above anything else. Unless you've got like 1 gig of RAM and your computer is from, you know, 2003. then you've got, okay, at that point, yeah, you've got some other stuff you need to do.
Like get a brand new computer.
Yeah, pretty much. Like, just like go buy like a $300 computer now, which will be better than what you've got. And then we can start, you know, then you can upgrade from there.
Oh, wow. Well, just to knock out, so we actually do all the items for the show. You know, we have different segments. I only have one thing on Weird Science, and I don't have it queued up to play it. I don't know if somebody's got there.
I can do it. Hold on. Let me get this microphone down here.
As you get set up.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious
satisfying.
This one, definitely you need to go to geekradio.com and watch the video on. This is sort of a more maker science kind of thing. This guy named Scott Parenteau wanted a cool vehicle that he could ride around in. He liked geodesic domes like Buckminster Fuller had and the many-legged Strand beasts created by Theo Jansson. You know, so imagine, you know, every like kind of there's that sort of steampunk, you know, robot overlord kind of look of things where you get into the pod and it's got the huge legs that, you know, make the big pounding metal sounds as you walk around. Well, this guy built one. He combined the geodesic dome and these legs, 12 legs, into the dome. If he calls it a walking pod, it's a steel shell. And you get into it by an elevator underneath. And so you go underneath it, and the elevator comes down. You know, like every 1950s spaceship that lands on its legs, and the elevator comes down the middle, and you get in and go up in it. And it walks on 12 legs, and they have a video. It was apparently at the Bay Area Maker Faire. This guy showed it off, and it's pretty it's totally impractical. But it's one of those, like, maybe I should have put it under try, buy, or fry, because even though it would go slow, it would be amazing to go around on. At least the kids in your neighborhood wouldn't mess with you.
This is awesome.
Chasing the guy in the big four-wheel drive truck with this, because then you could, like, climb up in the back of his truck like it's an attack from another planet.
I'm down with that. I would totally buy that. That's awesome looking. I would buy it so that I could like hook it up underneath my spaceship so that when I land, like the pod legs could like and ching 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 like walk out from my spacecraft and attack.
This would be the Technology Bites entry for the art car parade.
Yeah. Could hook this up. So like we could take Jay's car and remove the wheels and put these walkie legs underneath it. That would be awesome.
This kind of stuff, the sort of engineering to build it and make it work like that. I mean, yeah, you know, everybody's seen the cartoons or whatever can imagine something like this, but actually building one that's practical that actually walks is pretty amazing.
Especially because it's got 12 legs and they look like they're all. They look articulated. I mean, I guess he's got kind of a gear system, so they're not actually like individually like powered or whatever, but they all move like, and they all look like they're weight bearing, not just like, you know, decorative. And he's got two wheels down there that the thing rests on.
Yeah, I wondered when I saw 12, and I guess the deal is it's always on four legs and probably it's ready to transfer weight to the frontmost leg, and then the second leg is in motion and the third leg is supporting the weight.
It's like watching a horse run in slow motion, but like three horses.
And all the legs aren't off the ground at the same time.
It's confusing, but neat.
So I thought that one was cool, but yeah, all the prior weeks when we didn't have time, there was all kinds of, There were more articles with interesting stuff. Nobody's shooting rockets up right now because they all took like Memorial Day weekend. Well, they either took it off or they huddled in their house in the dark watching the floodwaters rise. Apparently, So there was that. I know the movie weekend wasn't very big. I don't know if anybody. I read mixed reviews on Tomorrowland.
There was some sort of Tomorrowland kind of side related. There was some space news that I was going to hit if we had a moment. As of today. Let me see. Make sure the date is right. As of this week, anyway. SpaceX is now the SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket is now certified for use in. Not just commercial payloads and civilian payloads, but is now cleared for use with national security and military payloads, which is interesting because this is an area that ULA has had a lock on for forever. ULA is the United Launch Alliance. That's sort of the joint venture between Boeing and Lockheed that handles, that handles rocket launches on behalf of the government. And so now SpaceX has been... they've been attempting to get into this because this is one more facet that they want to be able to cover. And just recently, as of this week, it looks like the government and the court system has given them the clearance to be able to carry some military and national national security type payloads. So potentially that could mean spy satellites. It could mean all kinds of stuff that SpaceX now has the legal ability to carry so that they can compete for some of those big fancy government contracts along with the likes of Lockheed and Boeing.
Well, and we mentioned, last week we mentioned the thing that there was that rocket that was going to launch the solar sail experiment and the secret spy plane or the space plane.
Yes.
I read today that apparently there are amateur spy satellite trackers, and they figured out it's moved like four times. The secret spy space plane has moved like four times, and they found it every time it moved.
Neat.
They found where it went.
I don't know what it's doing up there. It's doing something, I'm sure, like that involves intelligence gathering or whatever. I mean, the interesting thing about the what is the thing called? The X-24? Hold on, let me see.
The Illudium Pew-36? Wait, no, that's a Warner Brothers cartoon.
It's like the X-39B or
something. Is it the X-39B? It's the X... I should know this. I feel like a total...
That sounds like somebody's name for their car they built that they're going to race in the 30s. Come on, Bob, let's get in the X-39B and
no, it's the
back
X, the
barn. We'll save the farm.
Sorry, it's the X-37 is the name of it.
Okay, well, that sounds like a secret space plane.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the interesting thing about the X-37, the X-37 fancy secret space plane is that it does these weird long-duration missions. It goes up there, and they the first mission was from March 2011 to June 2012. Second mission was from December 2012 to October 2014. And then, it launched on 20 May, and it's up there still probably for quite some time. You know, there's no crew, obviously. It's unmanned. So it's up there doing all kinds of spying or something, whatever it's doing is classified. The government's not talking about it. It's an interesting thing that they're doing.
It's probably part of Jade Helm.
It's probably, no doubt, part of Jade Helm. The rain from the other day was the kickoff Jade Helm move from the weather control satellites, and currently the Jade Helm rockets are orbiting.
See, the grand unified theory is the chemtrails triggered the rains,
right,
which triggered the governor, who was suspicious of the military coming here, to put out a request to help.
You need to roll FEMA in there somewhere. Roll in and some then, FEMA.
I think they're repurposing the plexiglass, the clear plastic coffins, to be flood rescue boats.
No, that's what they're. That's where they're going to put the dissenters when Jade Helm terminates. So before we leave this here, so the Falcon 9, the first thing it looks like, the first contract SpaceX is going to be able to compete on here, because remember, this doesn't mean that they're just going to be given stuff. This just gives them the ability to compete. Is going to be for for GPS-3 satellites, next gen GPS satellites. So that will be that's a nice, civilian-friendly kind of application. Everybody uses GPS, and that'll be launched sometime in 2017, so the contracts will be bidding on soon. It'll be interesting to see if SpaceX is actually able to grab some of those launches, because obviously being able to serve, military and government payloads is something they're going to need to be able to do for longevity.
Well, that was the model that was kind of consciously chosen. That's why NASA backed off on kind of directly commissioning rockets, and that they basically put it out that, hey, we will put out contracts and support companies that can meet the specs, as opposed to saying, no, build us a rocket that looks that's like this and has these specifications and we'll pay you for it. Opening it up to where however many companies can do it, they'll work with them and depend on them. I mean, obviously we went through a thin spot where there weren't that many players, but now it's starting to change, and that should hopefully open up the commercialization of space and make it easier for NASA to do what it does.
Then we can be doing our Technology Bites 40th anniversary show from the surface of the moon. From Moonbase J.
Well, I watched sadly, when the weather is really terrible, then a lot of people, the power's out. But I did watch the movie Iron Sky, which is the one with the like Nazi base
Nazis
on the dark
from
side of the moon.
Dark side of the moon.
It's the equivalent. It's a fun little movie. It's the equivalent of sort of the like 80s, trauma type pictures where.
Yes, very, very trauma.
It embraces its low quality and has fun with it. And I must say it was amusing and well done.
By the time the movie got into the third act and started getting to the finale, it had thoroughly departed from any pretense of even pretending to be in the same space as reality. But it was funny. It was good. I liked it. They're making a sequel. Interesting to see how well the sequel does. It's a good little movie, though. Highly recommend it if you've got a weekend to kill and a lot of alcohol to drink and you want to watch something that's going to blow your mind.
You wonder what the sequel is. Is it the, like, I don't know, Japanese base on
no,
a different part of the dark
no,
side of the
it's
moon?
Actually, it's actually a Nazi base in the center of the Earth where Hitler's riding a dinosaur that's named after his dog.
Blondie.
Yeah, in real life. And Palin, or somebody who's Palin-esque, I guess is president of the United States and strikes some kind of deal, but is actually a lizard person.
Yep.
I do want to warn you that if you are a Sarah Palin fan or a member of the Tea Party, you might be offended by Iron Sky.
It's entirely possible.
So many were.
Well, it's kind of an equal opportunity offender as far as movies go.
Doesn't treat Hitler too nice either.
No, but that's like the safe bad guy. You pretty much can always go and make fun of Nazis in your movie, whatever your movie is.
Yeah, no, nobody's going to be picketing outside to get better treatment for Hitler on that, you know.
You can always, if you need a bad guy for your movie and you're not really sure and you think you might be able to swing it, Nazis are a safe bet. Just go with Nazis as the bad guy. Nobody's sympathetic. You can just go ahead and use that as the all-purpose bad guy. Especially if you've got a story involving time travel. Always good to have, you know, time travel and Nazis that you can blow up. Said that.
Yeah, I guess
the
final Nazi movie I need to watch. And Iron Sky is on Netflix if one happens to already be a subscriber. I'm not advocating that, but if you got some time, you're wanting to kill some time, that might be one. There's another one that looks intriguing where apparently it's got Nazi zombies.
Dead Snow.
It's a foreign film. Yeah, Dead Snow.
Yeah, it's really good.
Really?
And there's also actually a Dead Snow 2, which I haven't watched, but the first one was good.
Didn't Arnold Schwarzenegger just do like a Nazi movie? Or a Nazi movie. Oh, a zombie movie? I got Nazis on the brain. Didn't Schwarzenegger just do a zombie movie?
I don't know.
I swear he did, and it wasn't like an action zombie movie.
Oh, the new Terminator film.
Well, there was that, yes. Hold on.
Speaking of really good classic cult films while we're on the subject, and he's looking that up.
I am looking
Has anybody seen Surf Nazis Must Die?
I've only ever seen bits of that. I've never watched the whole thing.
When the grandson of a gun-wielding woman is murdered by neo-Nazi surf punks in the post-apocalyptic future, this grandma hunts them down for some bloodthirsty revenge. It's a surf movie with Nazis. It's like beach blanket Nazis.
Yeah, well, on the trauma pictures, there's a couple of those on Netflix right now, too. There's Toxic Avenger, the first one, and Class of Nukem High, which I the title, that's one of those where you know that that's how they came up with the movie, was somebody came up with the title and then they wrote a movie bit.
That sounds like a good one. Like they're all sitting around
Roger Corman
being like, man, I got this idea for a movie title, but I'm not really sure like if we could make it or not. Well, what's it called? We could totally do that. Just work backwards.
Oh, and it's so 80s. So people of a certain age, if you were a girl with big puffy hair or a guy who wore parachute pants or any of that kind of stuff, then this movie will speak to you.
Or if you're a fan of
such things.
Okay, real quick.
I had big puffy pants and parachute hair.
MC Flicked. The name of this movie.
Can't explain this.
The Arnold Schwarzenegger zombie movie that he just made. It apparently just came out. It's called Maggie. And it stars.
I haven't heard of that.
Stars Schwarzenegger. It's sort of kind of post-apocalyptic. There's a zombie plague, but it hasn't like destroyed society. It's just like made stuff suck a lot. And without spoiling the plot, just with like what's in the opening paragraph of this summary I'm reading, Schwarzenegger plays just like a regular guy, and his teenage daughter has like caught the zombie plague, and rather than like take her to the quarantine place, he wants to like let her die at home basically. And so apparently it's like a very like slow human kind of movie, and everyone is saying that Arnold has does a really great job in it. I haven't seen it, but I'd like to. It sounds interesting.
Kind of like Kindergarten Cop.
Yeah, just pretty much exactly like Kindergarten Cop, or The Running Man,
or Twins,
or Junior.
Yeah, yeah. Arnold's people don't quite get the whole. Yeah, it's kind of an art film, you know, real family, relationship kind of film. Ah,
what'd you find? Do it.
This little write-up calls it during her transformation
into a zombie.
Her loving father stays by her side. Her transformation.
Up and at them. Up and at them. Up and at them.
And then he starts to go by the governor. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the governor, Walking Dead. It's all connected.
And the goggles, they do nothing.
To the choppa.
Get to the choppa.
Up and at them.
Up and at them. Is the music playing yet?
Wow.
We gotta talk for like 5 more minutes.
Oh, well, that's easy enough. But the thing I had thought, I was interested in Tomorrowland, and then as I read the reviews, and they said that it was kind of that the, like, it had lots of promise going in, and that it hit a certain point in the movie where it's kind of got where it ran out of steam, and that it was very much like the boomer's vision of the future.
The teaser trailer hooked me when I saw the thing with the pen for Tomorrowland, with the girl picking up the pen, where as soon as she picks the pen up, she's like zapped into Tomorrowland. Just the teaser of that, I was like, that's cool, that's going to be neat. But same as with Peter, I've read some of the reviews that say that, like, it's one of those deals where you get kind of about halfway in, and then it's like, oh, is that what this movie is about? Well,
yeah, you know, the best tweet of the weekend, I think, was, yeah, I saw two movies this weekend. One was a horrible depressing dystopian future, and the other one was Mad Max Fury Road.
Which I haven't seen, but I would like to see. I've heard many good things about it.
I've heard good things about, was it Machina or
Furiosa?
It's the one about the android woman.
Ex Machina.
Yeah.
I just watched that. It is very good. It is very good. I watched it on the iTunes, and it was like excellent.
Fatal Attraction meets Androids?
I am not going to spoil it. It is complicated.
Yeah, I think that's part of the whole deal, is that it's not, it's sci-fi setting, but it's more of a like psychological thriller
kind
of thing.
Once you get probably about 10 or 15 minutes into it, once the movie starts going, you can kind of tell what's going to happen. Like they telegraph it pretty good, and you don't have to be a genius to kind of see where it's going. But it's really good.
It's still nice to watch it play
it's
out.
It's beautiful to look at. The movie is shot very well. We have long since passed the point to where, like, the robots that look like robots, and you see it on the screen, and there's like the robot, and she's got like the girl's face and like the robot body, and we're like long past the point where you point at it and you're like, that's an effect. It looks real. it looks great. The whole movie was done very, very well. Had a good ending too. I liked how it ended. So yeah, check that one out. Ex Machina.
Coming soon.
Coming to, I don't know if it's on Netflix or not. I know I got it on iTunes, but I'm sure you can find it. It is widely available.
It was in theaters not that long ago.
Yeah, they
right?
did. They didn't do like a simultaneous release, but they did like an early home release with it.
Which kind of makes sense. I must say I'm irritated by the whole, you know, they don't put stuff on to the movie channels. They want pay-per-view, and they want pay-per-view and DVDs are kind of all the movie business wants right now.
Well, about 10 years ago, I would have been okay with that, because I have like a DVD collection that has like stopped accumulating DVDs just a few years
right.
back.
You hit that point where you realize you don't rewatch very many of them.
Well, it's kind of when streaming started to get really prevalent. I've got a DVD collection that spans from like all of the classic movies that I love, and pretty much every good blockbuster movie up until about 2003. And then I was like, I don't even buy DVDs anymore.
Well, I guess it's like the moment in Men in Black when he says, this is going to be the new CD, and it's sort of the size of a quarter, and Tommy Lee Jones says he's going to have to buy the White Album again. Well, nowadays it's the new format. Now I'm going to have to buy all my movie collection again.
Yep.
I just can't wait till it's just all immediately available whenever you want it online.
It'd be nice if we could get all the distribution agreements worked out and have it be one source. That's really neat.
All right, well, that music tells us it's time to go, and not a moment too soon. Hopefully next week we'll have Barrett back in the studio, and, for all that he brings in terms of Barrett times and the yucks and the lulls.
Red hair. See if everywhere. He has a cheesy Italian accent when he comes back.
It works with his mustache.
That's a spicy meatball.
Hey, by the way, Geek Gathering's coming up in another week, so a week from Friday. I have the information up on the website at geekradio.com. You should come hang out. It's the Geek Gathering before our 20th anniversary, although I don't know what we're going to do. We are thinking about producing some shirts at the very least to celebrate the event.
Yeah.
Bring cash.
But come on out to the Geek Gathering anyway, and we hope to see you there.
We can talk about it.
We'll see you next week for sure. You've been listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Wing.
And he's
Groovehouse.
Hi, I'm Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk. Firefighters head into burning buildings while everyone heads out. Police officers put on protective vests each day at work. Members of the military are stationed in harm's way. What do they all have in common? They serve when called upon. Everyday folks like yourselves are called upon to occasionally perform a different role, jury service. A key principle of our nation is that our Constitution guarantees the right to be tried by the impartial jury. The Founding Fathers wisely understood that questions of liberty ought to rest with average citizens, not the government or one official. With people like you and your neighbors on juries, justice can be done. In a big city, you can easily start thinking, I'll just let the other guy across town go in for jury service. Nobody will miss me if I don't come. But here in Texas, we expect people to pull their own weight. When you get tapped on the shoulder, please honor the call to jury service. My name is Chris Daniel, your Harris County District Clerk, and I look forward to seeing you at the courthouse.
This is KPFT.
You might think of your vehicle as nothing more than a junk car, but it can help bring joy into the lives of others. We offer a convenient alternative to selling or trading in your automobile, and we accept all vehicle donations, whether they're running or not. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle and support KPFT. Our experienced representatives are available anytime. Just call 1-855-573-8227 KPFT car or visit kpft.org. Either way is easy, and you'll be contacted within 24 hours of the next business day to arrange for your free and easy vehicle pickup.